All right, welcome into the Intern Allen Show podcast. July 24th, episode, I don't remember if it's 44 or 45. 9:33 p.m., Wednesday night. A little bit more sports to talk about than last week. Still got some Twins, still got some Summer League. But we do have the Open Championship to recap, and I'm realizing right now as I say this that I was going to recap this with Loon Megs, but I don't have time anymore, so whoops. Might be Loon Megs. We'll catch up on the – we'll do a in-person pod in a few days here. Yeah, let's get into it. I mean – pretty much that's what's going to be on the pot. Open Championship. Some Twins talk, some trade deadline talk. And then we'll talk about the Summer League a little bit as well. That wrapped up. So let's get into it. The Open Championship concluded this past Sunday, 3 days ago. Xander Schauffele with a score of 275, which is... minus nine, is the champion golfer of the year by two strokes over Justin Rose and Billy Ho. My first thoughts are I would personally be okay if Xander Schauffele never won another major. That's a personal take. I don't have necessarily have anything against him. I don't think that he won't win another major. But I'm not even saying the golf game as a whole would be better, but I'm just like, to me, I enjoy a tournament less when Xander Schauffele wins because he's really boring. He's really boring. When he won the PGA at Valhalla earlier this summer, or the spring, I guess, in May. I don't know. Depends on whether you call that spring or summer. I thought, okay, well, and he won by like literally one stroke, had to make a putt on the last hole of the whole thing. But despite all that drama, it wasn't that exciting. And I said so on the pod. Partially, at least, I thought that was a Valhalla thing when everybody was 21 under. You kind of penciled in birdie for some of these guys on hole 18. It was almost like shocking if they didn't make birdie. And so when he made birdie to win on 18, it almost felt like he was just saving par. And so like that kind of killed it, some of it for me, but I think there's definitely something to the effect of Xander Schauffele just being boring is what's making some of these tournaments boring because, and again, this is a total credit to him. Like, if you're a golfer and somebody calls you boring, that's like one of the biggest compliments you can have. There's not a lot of boring golfers that are shooting, you know, I'm just talking even like dudes he play with on the course. You're like, oh, you're a boring golfer. And they're making double bogeys. That's not really how it works. Boring golfers, they hit the fairway, they hit the green, they make two putts, and then they keep going. That's like, I've spent the better part of my life trying to be a boring golfer. But no, I'm hitting trees. I'm in the fucking sand. I'm chipping it over the green and then back over the green again. I'm three putting. I'm driving it onto houses and shit like that. So when I say Xander's a boring golfer, it's a compliment, but he is an incredibly boring golfer. He had six birdies. I mean, his final round is incredible. Minus six in the final round. Six birdies. No bogeys for 65 when everybody around him, you know, is making mistakes here and there. A lot of people went relatively low in the final round. Scottie Scheffler was plus one, which is interesting. He's the furthest up the leaderboard that had a plus a round over par in the final round. But they're not making – a lot of people were making birdies. But nobody else sort of had the lack of mistakes that Xander had. Billy Ho had, let me see, one, two, three, four, five, six, he had the same amount of birdies, but three of them were in the last three holes, and he was already out of it because he made three bogeys. And so he won himself back some money there, but was never going to win the tournament. Ended up being such an anticlimactic finish. Xander was in, I don't know, the third to last group. There were like two groups that had to finish after him. But you kind of knew they wouldn't win. He didn't even really sellie on the green. At no point in the entire, I watched the next 45 minutes of TV coverage. I always like to see guys lift the trophy and stuff like that. At no point in the next 45 minutes of TV coverage did he really show a lot of emotion. He was like, oh, this is awesome. Like, I love that I won. And, you know, he should love that he won. But there was no, like, it wasn't a show. It was, I mean, you would have thought that Buddy won, like, a $200 gift card to Kohl's the way he was reacting. It was not, I won a major championship. But that's what happened. Xander won. He's now won two this year. In a year on the PGA, and you can sort of throw out the whole live thing. That's, I don't know. When I think about golf and golf storylines, I'm thinking about, maybe it's just because I don't watch the game as much, but as I used to at least, I'm thinking about like majors, PGA winners, or PGA Tour winners, Ryder Cup, stuff like that, if it's happening. Obviously, the FedEx Cup will still happen this year. I'm not thinking a lot of Liv. I'm not thinking the merger stuff. I'm not thinking whether John Rahm is happy wearing shorts at Liv Golf or not. Like, I don't give a shit. I'm thinking mostly, like, the tournaments that people care about and who's doing well. So, in that realm, if we're talking golf storylines, the storyline all year has been Scottie Scheffler. All year. He had, obviously, the big win at the Masters. Won, like, six tournaments this year. He had the big thing at the PGA where he got arrested. It's been the absolute year of Scottie Scheffler. He's still the number one player in the league, in the world. Still finished top 10 in this tournament, by the way. But you can't sit and look at the year of golf in 2025, 2024, it is, still. You can't sit and look at that year and say anything other than Xander Schauffele had a better year. I mean, he won two majors. If it's supposed to be your year, you're supposed to be the main guy, the main attraction in town, the big ticket player in golf, and you're not the guy that won two majors, then you're not that guy anymore. And we have to sort of sit here and look at a year of golf in which Xander Schauffele is the biggest player. And that doesn't make any sense to me. Not only is it weird that it's not Scottie, it's also weird that it is Xander. It feels like 3 days after the tournament, nobody even really cares about Xander Schauffele anymore. I'm not hearing a lot of Xander Schauffele buzz in the news at all. It's more like, oh, Xander Schauffele won a major, and now it's like, oh, now he won another one, and we still don't care about him. At least that's how I feel. Maybe I'm the biggest Xander Schauffele hater of all time, but it seems bizarre that this year in golf should be defined by Xander Schauffele's two major wins as like a dominant player in the game, but it doesn't feel like that is happening at all. Obviously, the FedEx Cup will have some sway over who's the better player this year. Maybe if Scottie wins I don't know what people think. If Scottie wins the FedEx Cup and a major, is that, and every other tournament, and it dominates the news, people calling him the next Tiger and shit like that, is that bigger than two major wins? I don't know. I think to me, it definitely feels like it is, but I don't know if I can objectively look at that and say, yeah, I'd rather have a FedEx Cup win and a major win than two major wins. I don't think I would rather have that if I were in their shoes. Anyway, Justin Rose, close call. Feels like he's had a bunch. Billy Ho did not expect to see him contend in a major really at this point, but he did. Thriston Lawrence. I was cheering for Thriston. I'm not going to lie, and I know his name is Tristan. And I'm sure maybe that Thriston is how you spell Tristan in South Africa or wherever the fuck he's from, but I love the name Thriston. It sounds like the douchiest eighth grader you've ever met, would be named like Thriston Lawrence. Thriston Lawrence, like, wore Osiris's and had a Cookie Monster snapback. Like, that's what Thriston did. And then turned to the biggest loser of all time in high school. That's a guy named Thriston move. But also apparently a guy named Thriston move is to finish fourth in the Open Championship. When I don't think anybody's ever heard of him before. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it on the Open Championship. Shane Lowry had a moment. He's sort of the Tiger Woods of Tyrrell Hatton's. Or he's a guy that gets probably just a little bit too angry. Really only is relevant on tournaments that happen in Europe, but always has a chance to win one of those. That's kind of what Tyrrell Hatton is. Shane Lowry's like the best version of that, where he'll actually be relevant in some other majors, not in Britain, but he's always got a chance to win. Always got a good chance to win. Felt pretty dominant at some points this week, early in the week here in where was this course? Troon? But yeah. Big weekend for the weather. Kept the scores nice and high, which is preferable to, you don't want to see guys killing. And sometimes in the Open Championship weeks when the weather's not that bad, it's just dudes absolutely ravaging historic golf courses. It's not that pretty. But yeah, Xander won. Who cares? He won again. All right, let's talk about the Twins a little bit. Let me get some water. We are, I believe, 2-3 since the last pod, so that was a step in the wrong direction a little bit. got swept by the Brewers. Played a 2-game series against the Brewers. We always do this against the Brewers for some reason. We play them more than most other NL teams because I think it's a rivalry. It's not really a rivalry. I mean, it's kind of, but first game went to 12 innings, and then the bullpen kind of blew up. It goes to extras tied at 3, and then we each score one in the 11th or the 10th inning. Either it was the 11th or 10th, I don't remember. But then in the 12th, they end up scoring like 4 more, and it's like, all right, well, we were leaking oil, and then all of a sudden everything blew up. In this case, Steven Okert and Josh Staumont were responsible for those runs. Those guys have been pretty decent for most of the year. But there's not, we're just like one dominant relief arm short, probably. Because even some of our dominant ones have shown some issues or shown some weak spots in the past couple, basically since the All-Star break even. In this next game, Griffin Jacks ended up sort of allowing the runs that made a difference in the game. We lost 8-7 in the next game. Joe Ryan was fine, but not great. Sort of had one bad inning that ruined everything. Griffin Jacks ended up getting got, and Caleb Thielbar as well, but that's not any kind of surprise. It seemed a little unfair to be expecting Griffin Jacks and Duran and guys like that to come out and not allow a run ever. When they do allow runs, and you kind of almost assumed they'd put up a zero for that inning, then it's like, oh, shit. Got to remember, these dudes allow runs too. Just some depth in the bullpen, and maybe a name we've heard of before would be good. I think a name we've heard of with playoff experience would be nice to bring in. We'll talk more about trade deadline after this. Jackson Chirio for the Brewers just killed us all fucking, well, I mean, it's only 2 games, but all series. Each of those 2 games, he multiple hits, extra base hits, homers, going like 3-for-4, making plays in the outfield, just absolutely killed us. Just bullied us all weekend. I don't even know if it was the weekend. Was it the weekend? Yeah, I guess it was the weekend. Look at that. But then we bounce back. We get swept by the Brewers, who are, the Brewers are a good team. They might even be in first place right now. Let me check that out. In the NL Central. They are indeed in first place in the NL Central by 6 games even. So yeah, they're a good team. We bounce back. Get swept. Bounce back against the best team in baseball. Take 2 or 3 from them. Game 1, we come out. We just low-key dominate them 7-2. Offense got rolling. Bailey Ober with an incredible start. Low-key on the low. Bailey Ober has been our best starter for like 2 months now. A lot of this is the Pablo Lopez not being that good this year and Joe Ryan not being as good the past month or two. But June and July, I mean, Bailey Ober's ERA right now is in like the mid-4s or something. A good chunk of that is 2 bad starts, one where he gave up 8 runs in like his first start of the year when he just like wasn't ready or something, I guess. He gave up 8 runs in just a couple innings, and he gave up 6 in another outing in like May. But June and July, he's been pretty damn solid. The playoff rotation, if you will, the playoff 3 guys that we're going to start, starting to look like some version of Pablo Lopez, Joe Ryan, Bailey Ober, starts to be something that you can kind of believe in. I think the mediocrity of Pablo Lopez this year is something that might, in a playoff series and in one playoff game, I still like my chances with him on the mound. And same thing with Joe Ryan. He's a guy that you'd need like a quick hook for in a playoff situation, because once things go bad, sometimes they can kind of go bad quickly. But almost Bailey Ober feels more comfortable than any of them right now. I don't know if that's crazy. Maybe it's not. But the numbers back it up that since June, he's been just as good, if not better, than those 2 guys. Game 2, Duran. Juan Duran, we lost 3-0. Juan Duran got, which still is weird to see, even though it happens more often than it used to. But we also, we didn't score at all. So it's tough to be like, oh, Juan Duran, like, why didn't you, whatever, when we didn't score, so we're never going to win the fucking game. Big yawn. Nearly 10 o'clock here. Got to work tomorrow. Zach Wheeler was on the bump for them, and he's very good, so that was tough. By the way, Castellanos had a couple big hits in the... I'm not going to get too into politics on this pod, but... Actually, you know what? Like, the Castellanos shit, like... I'm a little over it. It's just like... Like, the original Castellanos meme was... Tom Brenneman, like, saying... the F word, the gay one, on a live mic, on a broadcast, and then, like, as he's resigning, it's a homer. Now, like, a world event happens, and Castellanos gets a hit, and everybody's like, oh, the Castellanos thing. It's just no, it's not the same anymore. Maybe people are having fun, and I'm just being lame, I don't know, but, like, it was the Tom Brenneman mid- sentence, and there's a drive to left by Castellanos, and then a couple times after that, like mid-broadcast, while they're talking about people dying, Castellanos hits a pump. It happened like twice more where I think it was like legit and true to like the original Castellanos meme. And now, as long as he like he gets on base in the same 48 hours as Joe Biden dropping out of the race, and everybody like comes in their pants, it's just like what are we doing? Like, it's gotten too far. Maybe he did hit homer, I don't know. But, like, the Trump assassination, he got a hit that day, but he got a hit before the fucking thing even happened. So it's not, and everybody's posting his hit for the day. Like, first of all, it's just a hit. Second of all, it happened before it. It was like, he's a good hitter. He's been around forever. He knows how to fucking hit in the major leagues. He's going to get some hits. So when things happen on a day-to-day basis that are like, oh, world events, whatever, like, the odds are not that bad that he's going to have a hit. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a hater. But it's just, like, so far from what it originally was. Anyway. And you know I was saying the Castellanos meme just as much as anybody else was when it was actually happening 3 years ago, whatever it was. Game three, we walk it off with a Kepler infield single. So, you know, anyway in, I guess. Not the sexiest walk off of all time, but we'll take it. Felt like a series that we were in the whole time. You know, it's been somewhat rare over the past couple of seasons to see the Twins match up with one of the teams that are really relevant to the league, you know, one of the best teams in the league, and actually feel like we're just as good as them. Even the years when we were really good and winning the division, we would play a team like the Dodgers, and it would kind of be clear that we just weren't the same caliber. And maybe that would happen this year because the Dodgers are just a little bit different. But the best record in baseball is the Phillies. And for three games, we looked just as good as the Phillies. And even with some of our guys injured, which we'll get to in a moment. And it didn't, you know, maybe you can say what you want about how impressive a walk-off infield hit is, or if maybe it's a fluke, I don't know, but like, we were still in that game, we still won the game, we dominated game one. Game two was close the whole time. We didn't score, but they didn't score for eight innings either, so obviously we've struggled this year against high caliber opponents in terms of the Guardians and the Yankees and the Orioles, but this was the best team in baseball. Over three games, we were just as good as them. In fact, we beat them 2 out of 3. Which I don't remember the last time I could really feel that way about a Twins team. And, you know, it's one series, so it doesn't necessarily mean anything. But it's at least encouraging. Let's get into some other just random notes about the Twins. The Guardians are losing steam. They just won today. But coming into today, they were 3-7 in their last 10. 4-7 if you include the win today. They won by one run. It's just classic Guardians winning by one run this year. Beating the Tigers, who were shitty. The only problem with that, I mean, it's obviously, you know, we've been predicting the downfall of the Cleveland Guardians for most of the last 4 months. Most of the last 3 months, I guess. Seems like it's here. Maybe not here so much, but seems like they're kind of coming back to earth a little bit. The only problem is they were 3-7 in their last 10, and we were 4-6 in our last 10. So, you know, it doesn't really – we didn't take the opportunity. They're still 5 games up. We did not seize our opportunity with some of these struggles. It almost felt like to me that the All-Star break came at a bad time for us. Although we didn't play that well in that Giants series, felt like we were having some momentum into the All-Star break, and now we're... Well, we built on momentum. Just the Brewers series didn't feel good, you know, I guess. But almost felt like sometimes in football when the bye week comes at a bad time because the team has momentum, it almost felt a little bit like that. Other notes... Brooks Lee has fallen off, averaged down in like 240s, 230s now. Hot start, but he's not been as great. Recently, still young, obviously. Correa back on the shelf, plantar fasciitis. Big shocker there. I think it's just something we're going to have to deal with as Twins fans watching Carlos Correa for like the rest of his career, which is unfortunate, or as long as he's here. Fasciitis is not, I've never had it, obviously, but to my understanding, it's not something that like goes away or just like is fixed. It just is it's a nerve thing that just flares up and it hurts, and then you got to basically not be on your feet for a little bit while it goes down. And we've had various flare-ups of that happening to Correa since he's been on the team. Kind of was hoping that it would be a, oh, I'm going to sit out of my appearance in the All-Star game, rest over the All-Star break, and then get back after it. But then he went on the 15-day or the 10-day IL. And seems like he'll do just a little bit over the 10 days and come back. But still, we don't love not having in the lineup. Some fucking random people have been in the lineup past few days. A guy named Diego Castillo, who actually hit really well. Was on the team for like 3 days and now is gone again. Eddie Julian is back up. Let's see who else is up right now. We only have four infielders on this team right now. Willy Castro, Eddie Julian, Brooks Lee, and Carlos Santana. Obviously missing Jose Miranda as well. He's going to come back soon, I believe. That's why I think he's starting a rehab something. Royce Lewis is starting a rehab stint. Correa should hopefully be back soonish. But a little bit of a struggle across the infield at the moment. Castro's our all-star. He's playing well. Carlos Santana's been hitting well now. Eddie Julian, like, refuses to swing the bat and has struck out 8 times in his 5 games back up. So there's something wrong. We got to send him to a shrink or something. I don't know. But we got to figure out Eddie Julian. Last few notes before we talk about trade deadline is Byron Buxton has been absolutely wailing over the past month. His OPS is 1.2, 1,200. He's got like 8 pumps in that time. Let me see the actual number. 6 pumps, 15 RBI, 373 average, 434 on base, 776 slugging is crazy. 9 doubles, going a long way there. I mean, he's just back, and hopefully he stays back again. We've talked about his ups and downs a lot on this podcast, but hopefully this is a sort of sustainable run of good hitting. Also super notable, the past, I guess, two weeks or so, Matt Wallner is back up. He's got an OPS over 1.186 right now, so just as good. Or just about just as good, batting 355. Any kind of high average from Matt Wallner is shocking, and he won't stay up there forever, but 355, 3 homers in 11 games, 444 on base, 742 slugging. He's got 3 doubles as well, so I think he had a homer today as part of that win, and we needed it because it was a one-run game, obviously, so really good signs from them. Outfield has been sort of taken care of. Feels like you got a lot of options. Infield has been a bit of a struggle, but once all these guys get back, then holy shit, we have a ton of options. But Eddie Julian's going back down, I'm sure. He hasn't shown much that would indicate that he needs to stay back up here. Okay, let's talk about the trade deadline a little bit. It's coming up, I believe it's July 31st, but I totally could have made that up. Trade deadline day. I know it's coming up. I've seen words of it, you know, seen some signs, some rumblings online. I don't know what the fuck I'm saying right now. July 30th. Are there only 30 days in July? No, there are 31 days in July. Why wouldn't it be the last day? That's crazy. Anyway, here's my official statement on what I believe the Twins do and do not need. Remember last year when the Twins did nothing? I was of the opinion that it was a good idea to have done nothing. And everybody else in the world seemed to be hating on that. not hating on me specifically, nobody listens, but everybody was hating on the fact that Twins did nothing. And I thought it was a good idea, or I was at least okay with it. I think I might take a victory lap on being right about that, because the team played well in the postseason. We lost to the eventual World Series champions, but we still played well. I don't know if there was at any point where we were like one piece away from beating the Rangers in that series. It felt like they were just kind of a better team. They were hot. They were just going to play well. And we held on to pieces like Matt Wallner, who's now playing well. We held on to Brooks Lee. We held on to Walker Jenkins, who, you know, we'll be happy to have in 2 years. You know, we held on to Manuel Rodriguez. You know, all these guys that some of them are contributing to the team right now. Some of them will be contributing soon. We kept instead of trading away for, you know, hopefully getting a win or something. Obviously, if we would have won the World Series with those guys, then it would be playoff. But I don't think we were ever going to have that happen. So I'm okay with keeping them. This year, however, the way I feel about the team, the way that I've seen them respond offensively in a lot of these games, even today, for example, with the big 3 runs to tie the game before eventually winning it in the 9th, I think we need to invest in starting pitching. I think it is a move we should do. We should get either a sort of top of the line starter. Maybe not top of the line, either a like really high-performing starter, or at least a starter that has significant playoff experience and success in the playoffs. And I think it should be somebody that we then do not have to pay the next year. I think we want rentals. We want a guy that we're going to have on our team for the playoff stretch and in the playoffs. And then we don't have to pay again. The team is sort of well documented to be under payroll struggles this entire season. They want to keep costs down. I don't think now is the time to like go trade for a guy that we're then going to have to pay for another 2 years at a high rate or whatever. I think we get a 4-month rental, elite arm for these 4 months, try to go win a chip with us, and then say, see ya, buddy. Some guys that I've picked out that might kind of fit that mold are Jack Flaherty, who's playing for the Tigers right now. He's got a 3.24 ERA this year. He's going to be a free agent next year. We just say bye. If we want to re-sign him, we can. He's still relatively youngish. I think he's still in his 20s, not 30 yet. But that's a guy, you know, if he likes being around target field, wants to sign with us again, then we have that option, but we don't necessarily have to. We're not locking ourselves into paying a salary. Yusei Kikuchi is a guy for the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays are very bad right now as well. He's a guy whose ERA is in the 4s right now, but he's been good in the past. I believe he's got playoff experience. I could have made that up. But he'll be a free agent next year. Just see what you get out of him. If it's nothing, it's nothing. He's probably not going to cost that much in sort of trade value right now. So we'll see what you have there. Nathan Eovaldi is another guy. I'm literally watching him pitch right now. He's pitching for the Texas Rangers. The difficulty here is the Texas Rangers might be good enough that they're not going to sell. They're, I believe, in third place in the West right now, behind both Seattle and Houston, who's had a good couple of weeks. So they're too good. I mean, they won the World fucking Series last year. It seems unlikely that they'd sell a ton of the team. Try to sneak in that playoff and get something going, but Nate Eovaldi's not a guy that they have any control over. He has a player option for next year at like $20 million, which is a lot of money, but I think we'd be okay if he makes that option, and then if he doesn't, then okay, it's fine. We have him for as many months, and he's a guy who was good in the postseason last year. He was electric in the postseason for the 2018 Red Sox. maybe this is a little biased for me because I was a fan of that 2018 Red Sox team. I was a fan of Nate Eovaldi at the time. I've seen what he can do in the postseason. He sort of turns into a different pitcher. Just fucking eats innings and doesn't allow any runs in the postseason. Doesn't even matter how much days rest he's on. So I'd love to have a guy like that on my team. He's actually kind of a personal favorite player for a couple years now. So maybe that's part of why I want him. But another guy is Cal Quantrill out of Colorado. He's got a 3.78 ERA in Colorado, which is crazy. It's very, very hard to pitch in Colorado. And he is his contract. He isn't a contract next year, so we'd have to control that contract. We'd be in control of that contract. But he's only making about $7 million right now, so we'd pay him $7, $8 million next year because of that contract. I think for a guy that's pitching as well as he is in such a horrible place to pitch, getting him at $8 million, even if we have to pay it next year, is a great move anyway. He's a guy who can kind of feel confident pitching a postseason game, even though I don't think he has much postseason experience, but he's just pitching really well right now. So you just get a good player, and he'll hopefully play good in the playoffs. I also mentioned we need bullpen help. I didn't want to look into bullpen. There's just the guy that we're probably going to make a trade for a bullpen on. And almost everybody will not have ever heard of him in their entire life. That's just the nature of bullpen arms. They're so anonymous. That being said, Brock Stewart is back. He was on the 60-day IL. Was out for a while. He's been out all year, basically. He is back now. He was very good at the end of the year last year. That could be a big piece for us. I think we still need one more. If we're running out of a playoff bullpen where the top five guys are, you know, Duran, Jax, Alcala, Brock Stewart, and some guy we bring in that's pitching pretty well, I think that feels very comfortable. The less we have to rely on Cole Sands has actually been pretty good this year. I mentioned that last week, but the least we can rely on a guy like Cole Sands or Funderburk or Okert or Stomont or fucking Thielbar, forgot his name for a second. He's been on the team for 10 years. I almost forgot his name, but the least we can rely on guys like that, the better. But I like Brock Stewart, and hopefully you add one more to that. As far as hitting goes, I think maybe part of the reason I believe in this team so much is because I've seen what it can do offensively right now. It feels like we have 15 good options at the plate, and we can only play 9 at a time. You know, some of them don't play catcher, which is unfortunate when we have to play Christian Vasquez. But, you know, we've got guys in AAA that we're going to have guys in AAA that I'm going to like having on offense. And it's just kind of the nature of the Wins team is there's just a lot of options. You know, Manny Margot is contributing this week in a big way. Like, he's one of the worst offensive players on the team right now, but he's decent. So I don't necessarily think we need to add there. Certainly I don't think we're getting as much value adding on offense as we would adding on the pitching staff. I think that's it for the Twins for now. We'll see. We'll have another pod. We'll have another pod the day after. Next pod is coming the day after the trade deadline. Actually, my pods might get weird next week. I don't really know. We'll see the situation. We'll get to that in a minute. The Wolves to the Summer League, which is now over. I don't know if I ever, actually thought about how short the Summer League was until I started podding about it. In past years, I'm like, oh, the Summer League's on. And then I, grind Summer League for, 4 days, and then, I lose interest in the Summer League. So then I didn't realize that it actually ends almost that quickly. The Summer League only lasts 2 weeks. If you would have asked me, I would have said it was, a month. But it only lasts 2 weeks. In the past, like I said, I would watch for, 5 out of 7 days of a week and then be like, all right, I'm done with the summer league, and then not realize that it ended by itself instead of it just being me not watching anymore. But the summer league is over. The Wolves, very, very, very similar to their in-season tournament performance. We went 4-1, and that was not good enough to make the playoffs. So, good. Because I think only the top 10, the top, sorry, not definitely not top 10, top 4 teams make the playoffs in the 4 out of 30 teams make the playoffs in the Summer League. Not that I'm complaining, who gives a shit, it's the Summer League. But we went 4-1. So, undefeated since the last pod in the Summer League. I'll have you note. Like I said, last week we were talking about players here. We're not talking about team or results. Rob Dillingham is one of our players of focus. Obviously, first round pick, number 8. Last week we talked about how he struggled with efficiency, but showed good comfort passing the ball. Similar in game 1 of this week, although he's, you know, scoring at a higher volume this time. 15-6-6, so 15 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. I lied, I misread my note. 15 points and 6 assists on 6 of 21 shooting. So again, this is a very inefficient game. And anytime, you know, 15 points, it looks all right, but 15 points and 21 shots is not all right. He's not helping the team at that efficiency, even though he scored a good couple of points. That was in the, I guess, game 4 of the Summer League against the Rockets. In their last game against the Magic, 25 points on 11 of 18 shooting, 3 of 7 from 3, and 12 assists. So this is exactly what we wanted to see. And so it took us to the last game to see it. But honestly, the fact that we've seen it once, we can almost call the whole Summer League a positive. Because, you know, it's very easy to write off Summer League games that don't go well and be like, all right, well, he's nervous, whatever. But the fact that we've seen him score very efficiently, shoot the 3 ball well, and get his teammates involved at an elite level in one game this year, it's like a big check mark checked for me as far as whether Rob Dillingham is going to be the guy we want to be this year. Again, he doesn't have to be a game controller. He has to be a guy that adds energy, adds scoring off the bench, makes shots. You know, I'd love to see some of pick and roll stuff with him and Nas, even just shot creation stuff where he's creating opportunities for Nas Reed, that type of thing, with those two guys leading the second unit. It seems like he will be able to do that. You know, there's going to be some nights where he comes in and scores 12 points in 8 minutes and a half or something like that, and provides a real lift for the team. There's going to be some nights where he goes 0-for-7 from the field and we're like, what the fuck happened to Rob Dillingham? But that is what it is. Hopefully a lot of that kind of gets evened out by playoff time, but we'll see. Terrence Shannon Jr. Got a toe injury in the 4th game. Played only 7 minutes, didn't really record a stat. I think he had 1 rebound, but no points. My deep summer league experience means that, or tells me that, this is not serious. There's very little information about it because they don't need to share it. But every almost injury or every half injury in the summer league, guys get shut down immediately, especially if they're going to make the team anyway. If they seem like, you know, if they're a pick in the draft, they're just shut down immediately. If they're not fighting for their basketball careers, you get even a whiff of an injury and you're shut them down. So the fact that he sat out the rest of the season, or the rest of the summer league, doesn't really mean anything. Probably a little discomfort in the toe area, and they're like, all right, well, we don't need to see any more. We really didn't need to see any more after his 25-point game in game 1. But especially when he picks up a little bit of a knock, then we're totally fine with him just kind of sitting out. And so worry level is on 0 for me on that. Leonard Miller is the last of our target guys in the summer league. And we talked about last week, he had how he should be dominating the summer league. He had 1 dominant game, but didn't necessarily put it together on the shooting end. But that's the type of game we wanted to be able to see. had another couple of those games in the past week. So against the Rockets, 21 points, 11 rebounds, and 9 of 17 shooting. But 1 of 5 from 3. Now, the good news is here, we asked him to dominate the Summer League. He's now dominating the Summer League. A little bit of a spoiler alert, but the next game he had 20 points as well. So that's three, you know, his last three games of the Summer League ever, because it's his second year in the Summer League. Scored 20 points in each of them, all on high-efficiency shooting. That's exactly what we asked. We asked him to dominate, he dominated. The downside is just a little bit that in order to dominate in the NBA, you have to be able to, especially at the wing position, and he's a big wing, but he's still a wing. And if he's not a wing, then we got to work on a lot more other things. So he's a wing. In order to dominate at the wing position in the NBA, almost at any position other than center, and even then, you have to be able to shoot the three ball at a high level. And it's just, 1 of 5 isn't good. You know, obviously, incredibly small sample size. He did shoot two of three in the last game. Last game, he had 20 points and 8 rebounds on 9 of 15 shooting overall. 2 of 3 from 3. So, like, we like that. But the way that he's scoring in these Summer League games is probably not a way in which he's going to be as easily available to him in the NBA. It's a lot more difficult to score in the NBA. It's a lot more difficult to score when you're not the number one option on an offense. When he's on the floor with guys like Anthony Edwards, with guys like Karl-Anthony Towns, even a guy like Jaden McDaniels, if he's playing the two and Leonard Miller's playing the three, or making me Mike Conley's on the floor and McDaniels on the bench, whatever it is, he's going to be the fourth option at best most of the time. And for him to be a really valuable fourth option, he's got to be able to knock down open threes. And right now it just doesn't – he had a good last game, sure, but most of the rest of the summer wasn't that convincing. I saw something on X from Dane Moore, who I love to talk about on this pod because he knows more about the Wolves than anybody. He was breaking down, like, film – of Leonard Miller's jump shots and how possession to possession his jump shot doesn't look the same. It doesn't look like it's the same person shooting the ball. You know, a Steph Curry jump shot looks like a Steph Curry jump shot. It's, you know, maybe shouldn't compare him to Steph Curry, the best shooter of all time, but like a Draymond Green jump shot looks like a Draymond Green jump shot. He's got the backpack on every time. It looks the same. Right now, a Leonard Miller jump shot looks, you know, in the second quarter, doesn't necessarily look like a Leonard Miller jump shot in the third quarter, or even one possession later. It just kind of looks different and happens different every time, which is not a great sign in terms of consistency shooting the ball. That's the type of shit that I do when I go shoot around. It's like, oh, let's try this. Maybe this will feel good. And I've been doing that for fucking 7 years trying to find a jump shot. But, and by 7 years, I mean 17 years. I don't know why I said seven. But the point is, Leonard Miller should not be having the same problems with his jump shot that intern Alan Post does. And so it just has to be a huge concern that it's just not a development that seems to be happening. And maybe he does have a bigger role this year and he carves out a couple minutes here and there for himself and everything, and he can make some shots and maybe it does go better. But yeah, I think it's a little bit of fool's gold to say, oh, he scored 20 in Summer League 3 straight games. He's definitely going to do the NBA. It's just he's not going to have the same opportunities, you know, as he does now. But we'll see. We'll see. I reserve the right to be proven wrong, and I'll be happy about that if it happens. But by the way, also in Timberwolves news, I saw that Luka Garza dropped 59 and 20 rebounds in a pro-am. 59 points and 20 rebounds in some pro-am in Minnesota, I believe it was. Nobody is more made for dominating pro-ams than Luka Garza. Luka Garza in college was one of the best scorers the college game has ever seen, Naismith Player of the Year, all that shit. The only reason he isn't that in the NBA is just he's not a good enough athlete to stay on the floor on defense. But he is a elite scorer with the best of them, especially against guys who aren't as good as him. So it kind of rocks to see a 59 burger from Luka Garza. That is who that guy is he's a scorer. And against pro-am bodies and pro-am athletes and pro-am defenders. I'm happy to see him get that like he did. That's enough of the Wolves post-game. A little bit of a quick pod this week, but, you know, I didn't have any super interesting MLB draft breakdowns to do, so... still over 50 minutes, and I got a pod to, or I got a post game to wrap up here. So, by the way, former Twin Robbie Grossman just hit a homer for the Twins or for the Rangers. Did not know he was still in the league. Post game is I'm coming home for like a week. That's kind of it. I mean, so Loon Nation, rise up. We'll do a live pod or something. I don't know. Also bring in Loon girlfriend home. Meeting the parents. Well, she's met mom. She's met Loon, my mom. She's now has to meet Loon, my dad. But she's staying with Loon, my parents, and I at the old cribbo. And yeah, we're gonna hang out. I'm working remotely. Swung that for my job, so that was huge. Going to Loon Meg's lake, playing a little Perm with Loon Beast and Loon Meg's. Any other loons or gooses you're trying to hang out? I'm down. What was I gonna say? Oh, pod might be weird next week. I'm a little, Loon and my parents don't know about the pod, first of all, so if I'm home, I'm not really going to be podding in the house, because they don't know about the pod. And I don't want Loon, my mom, to find out about the pod, because then she will listen to every episode that's ever been done, and I've said some things that I don't necessarily want her to hear on this pod. So, Loon, my dad, could care less, but also Loon, girlfriend, doesn't want to listen to me pod either, because... I think she'd get the ick or something. Not that that would mean anything, but she just doesn't want to. She's would think I'm a loser. So might have to go on a little drive by myself to go pod, or I might just not pod until the next weekend. But then I should also pod with Loon Megs, because I told him I would pod with him. So anybody want to pod, we can hang out and pod. Otherwise, the pod might be might take a hiatus for a week. That's really it. Leaving Thursday night. Clutched up a big PTO day for Friday. Had like 1.5 days earned up, so that was huge. And then, staying for a week, leaving next weekend. And that's it. It's going to be a blast. I don't know. That felt like a big topic, but there's not really that much to talk about, because I'm just going to be there. All right, that's the show. House emoji, because I'm coming home.